Good morning. Yeah, I'm out of the spotlight there. All right, how's everyone doing today? So we put the podium on this side because this side is just, we have a lot of folks over here. I love seeing this. And if you can, hopefully I don't block the PowerPoint. You may not be able to see it. You'll find out when we flip through some of the slides, but hopefully that won't be a big deal. It won't be a huge loss. So how many of you remember our theme for 2024? Theme for 2024. If somebody shout it out, even if you're close, we'll give you credit. God and I can do more in 2024, right? Okay? Sometimes I'm thinking like, is it God and us? Okay, no. We and God? No. God and I can do more in 2024. Okay? So, obviously I'm not Terry. Here I am. So Terry, I'll read you the reason why I'm here. Terry sent out an email earlier this year, and he asked some brothers to speak just a few different days this year. And I'll just read you an excerpt from the email that he sent, because I think this is good context for the message this morning and kind of will give you some insight. He said, "Brothers, as I'm preparing for this Sunday's message," and this was back in, I think, January, he said, "I'm remembering that I want to give you, brothers, another opportunity to preach and teach on select Sunday mornings at FBC. At the beginning of the year, when I proposed a theme for my life this year," and that was God and I can do more in 2024, "I commented that Hebrews 11 might be a good place for some of the men at FBC to take one of the examples of faith in that chapter and develop a message or lesson on that person to encourage the church with." So that's what I'm going to do this morning. He said, "Just look at what men and women of faith did by trusting God's promises." God's promises, okay? Putting our faith in God and trusting God's promises. That's going to be important for this morning. And Terry said, "So I'm giving you brothers an opportunity to speak again this year, the first Sundays in the month beginning in March." Okay, it's April. But I just want you guys to know that the reason why Terry has given us the first Sundays is because the first Sunday is Communion Sunday. So we have communion at the end. And so that gives us only about 25 minutes for a sermon. And there's no way that Terry could preach a sermon in 25 minutes. So that's why I'm here today, is because I'm stuck trying to get this thing done in 25 minutes, something like that. We'll see about that. All right, so if you could open your Bibles to Hebrews chapter 11. So we're going to go over, you can see that's not fair, the life of Joseph. The person that I'm going to speak on today is Joseph, one of my favorite stories from the Bible. But I just want to start out in Hebrews chapter 11 because we talked about faith. Terry mentioned looking at what men and women of faith did by trusting God's promises. So the first question is, what is faith? We talk about faith. You hear about faith a lot. I just want to use the definition from Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. It says, "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen." So faith is simply a belief or a hope in something that hasn't happened yet, or something that you haven't seen, or you haven't seen proved out. And as believers, we put our faith in a lot of different things, right? We believe what's in this book, right? How many of you guys were there when they nailed Jesus to the cross? None of us were there, but we believe. How many of you were there when God created the heavens and the earth? None of us were there, right? So we believe by faith. In fact, verse 3 says, "By faith, we understand that the universe was created by the word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of things that are visible." And we know from Genesis chapter 1 that God spoke and he created everything, right? So we put our faith in what the Bible says about that. All right, so let's talk about faith for a second more. So Hebrews chapter 11 is sometimes referred to as the Hall of Faith, kind of like the Hall of Fame. Like, there's a lot of different really faithful people from the Bible who are referenced in this chapter, and it talks about their faith. And so Joseph is mentioned here, and that's why I selected Joseph. But, it's Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, the prophets. Gideon, Samuel, David. These are a lot of, like, you know, if you know, if you've been around the Bible a little bit, you've heard some of these names, right? Talking about promises, right? The faith in God's promises. If you look at verse 13, there's kind of an aside, so it's already talked about. It's introduced Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And then the writer of Hebrews says in verse 13, 11, 13, these all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar. And so a lot of these promises that the people in the Old Testament had faith in, they knew that God made a promise, God had a plan, and yet they did not see the fulfillment of those things. So it says that they died in faith. These all died in faith, okay? And so when we get to the end of this, I'm going to tell you guys that we have an advantage over a lot of these Old Testament folks because we know a lot more of God's plan, and we've seen a lot more of God's promises than some of these folks did. All right? If you skip ahead to verse 22, this is where it introduces Joseph. And so in this chapter, it's just kind of like a one-liner about, you know, why these people are included in, you know, what their faith was in. It says, by faith Joseph, at the end of his life, made mention of the exodus of the Israelites and gave directions concerning his bones. And if you just think about that verse, it's kind of a weird verse. Like, it says that this guy, Joseph, he was at the end of his life, he talked about that the Israelites were going to leave Egypt, and then he gave some instructions about his bones. That's kind of a weird way to be remembered. But we'll talk about why that's important when we go through Joseph's life. So can you go to the next slide, please? All right, so if you want to turn in your Bibles back to Genesis chapter 37, and I'm going to try to do the impossible, going through Joseph's life, and summarize it in a short period of time. So Joseph, if you know anything about Joseph, you know that his life was marked by a lot of injustice, unfairness. He was treated very unfairly. And there's just a lot of things that happened to him that were really unfortunate, and it doesn't seem like it was his fault that any of these bad things happened. Okay, we'll kind of talk through those things. If you don't know about Joseph's life, we'll kind of cover it. Some important context for the background. So we're in Genesis. We're in the first book of the Bible, right? We're starting in chapter 37. So what's happened before this? The main stories that have happened in the Bible before this are the creation of the world, God's creation, right? And then we know about the flood, and there was Noah, right? And then you have Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, I just have them up here in the corner, because these are the three, if you know anything about the Jewish faith, these are the three patriarchs. They're the sort of the pillars that the Jewish faith was built on, right? Because God made promises to Abraham. He told Abraham, I'm going to make you a great nation. And he told Abraham, go from where you are, and you're going to go to this new place that I'm going to show you. I'm not going to tell you where it is, but I just want you to go and do it, okay? So God made that promise to Abraham. He would make him a great nation. He made the same promises to Isaac. So Isaac was Abraham's son. He made the same promises to Jacob. So you have these Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, right? So Joseph, if you look at chapter 37, verse 1, this is where we get introduced to Joseph. So Joseph is the son of Jacob, the grandson of Isaac, the great-grandson of Abraham. All right, so I'm just going to start reading in chapter 37, verse 1. Jacob lived in the land of his father's sojournings in the land of Canaan. So Canaan is what we consider the promised land. It's actually where Israel is today, the country of Israel. And this was the land that was promised to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob during their lives. God made the promise, this is going to be your land, this is where I'm going to bring you guys. Okay? So here the story starts out, Jacob and his family are living in Canaan. They're living in the promised land. They're living where God said that they were going to be. Okay? Jacob lived in the land of his father's sojournings in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was pasturing the flock with his brothers. He was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father. Now Israel, and that's another name for Jacob, now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a robe of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him. So here you have, here we get an introduction to Joseph, right? He's young, he's 17 years old here, and he's his dad's favorite. Now there's 12 brothers. Jacob has 12 sons. These become the 12 tribes of Israel, and Joseph is one of them. And because he's the son of his old age, he was one of the sons of Rachel. Jacob had a few wives. Rachel was his favorite wife. Joseph was his favorite son. Okay, but what did his brothers think of that? Did his brothers like him? No, they didn't like him. In fact, it says they were really jealous of him. And it says they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him. So, here's another thing. You've probably heard of the coat of many colors, right? So there's that introduction to, you see that Jacob really loves his son and gives him something that his other sons don't have, right? So they're all jealous of him. So what happens? So he's Jacob's favorite. What's really important from chapter 37 is that Jacob has two dreams. Two dreams, and both of these dreams are basically that his brothers and his dad and his family are going to bow down to him. So he has this first dream, and it says, or actually I'll read the second one. He says, "Behold, the sun, the moon, and 11 stars were bowing down to me." So that was his dream. But guess what he did? Did he keep that dream to himself? No, he went and told his whole family. How do you think that made his brothers feel? They didn't like him very much, did they? Okay, it made it even worse. In fact, it says that they wanted to kill him. So fast forward a little bit in chapter 37. Jacob says, "Hey, Joseph, you need to go out into the fields. Your brothers are all out there shepherding the flocks, and you need to go and check on them." So his brothers see Joseph coming. And you know what they want to do? They want to kill him. Because they're like, man, let's end this thing. He's our dad's favorite, and he's such a jerk. He's stuck up. He tells us all these dreams that he's going to be better than us. He's going to be greater than us. So let's put him to death. Well, instead of actually putting him to death, they sell him to these Ishmaelite traders who come by, and these guys take him to Egypt. So fortunately, Joseph isn't put to death, but he's sold to Egypt as a slave. How many of you could say you hate a family member so much that you would want to sell them as a slave to Egypt? Right, show of hands. Anybody? You hate your sibling so much. Next slide, please. This was back in 2017. Colt was 3 years old. And Mac, so Colt and Mac are my sons. Today, Colt was annoyed with Mac, so he said, "Mac, be quiet, or I'm going to send you to Egypt." Colt knew the story of Joseph, and he was really angry enough that he wanted to sell his brother into slavery, sending him to Egypt. So hopefully none of you really feel this strongly, but that's what happened. All right, next slide, please. All right, so we fast forward to chapter 39. You skip 38 and scroll over to 39. Oh, by the way, Joseph was sold. Anyone know how many shekels of silver he was sold for? 20 shekels of silver. You know anyone else who was sold for shekels of silver later in the Bible? It was 30 shekels. Hold that thought, okay? All right, so chapter 39. We're going to keep rolling through this. So now Joseph has been sold into Egypt, and he's purchased by a man named Potiphar. Potiphar was evidently he was pretty close to Pharaoh. So Pharaoh was the king of Egypt, right? And Potiphar was somehow connected to him, right? So he became responsible for all of Potiphar's house. If you go to 39, let's just do 39 chapter verse 1. Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who brought him there. What does it say happens to Joseph here? So pay attention. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him an overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food that he ate. So here, you kind of see a little bit of a flip, right? So you have this injustice, this unfairness. Joseph is mistreated by his brothers, by his family. He's sold into slavery. And yet here, there's some sort of redemption that's happening where, all right, now God had favor on Joseph, and because of Joseph, God had favor actually on Potiphar and his family and his household. And so he becomes, he's put in charge of everything that Potiphar has, right? He says, Potiphar, the only thing he was concerned about was the food that he ate, all right? So what else do we learn about Joseph from chapter 39? If we continue in verse 6, or the rest of verse 6, it says, now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, lie with me. So now you have, it kind of gets a little bit interesting here. So Joseph's in charge of everything, right? And here, Potiphar's wife says, hey, Joseph, come on. My master's, or he's not here anymore. My husband's not here. Everybody's outside the house. Come on, just give me a kiss. I just want a kiss. Now, would it be right? So I'm married to Jessica. Would it be right for me to kiss anyone else besides Jessica, my wife? No, it's not right. Joseph knew that. And what did he say? Verse 8, it says, but he refused and said to his master's wife, behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house. He's put everything that he has in my charge. He's not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept anything from me except for you, because you're his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Okay? So Joseph, he had his convictions, right? How old was Joseph when he was sold into slavery? He was 17. He was just a teenager, right? After he's 17, how much more access does he have to other people that believe the same way he did? There's no one there in Egypt, right, that believes in the one true God. There's just Joseph. He's there by himself. He could have said, okay, there's nobody kind of keeping an eye on me anymore. I'm just going to do my thing. Nope, he was. He had a very strong conviction. He said, how can I do this wicked thing and sin against God? Okay? And so you know the rest of the story. So she keeps going on and on and on, and she keeps convincing him day after day, and it says that he wouldn't even listen to her. And finally, one time, you know, she grabs his cloak, and then he runs away, and she's left with his jacket in her hands, and then she just, you know, makes this false claim and says, hey, Joseph was trying to kiss me and all this stuff. And guess what happened? Guess what Potiphar thought? Was Potiphar happy about it? No, don't you mess with my wife. He throws Joseph right back in jail. So now he's in jail. First he's mistreated by his brothers, and then God shows favor on him. Now he's unjustly accused, and now he's thrown in jail. Let's see what happens. Have you ever felt treated unfairly like that? Have you ever felt like something happened and you were like, there's no way this should have happened? It's happened to me in my life. It's happened in my family's life. There's things where I feel like people have been treated unfairly. But you know what? I'll get back to that in a second. All right, so chapter 39 continues, and it says, let's go down to verse 21. But the Lord was with Joseph, so now he's in jail. The Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. So you see another kind of change in events, right? So that he's treated unfairly. He's thrown into prison for something he didn't do, and yet the Lord continued to bless him in prison. All right. Can you go to the next slide, please? All right, so chapter 40. Move forward to chapter 40. Another key event in Joseph's life. So he's there in jail. He's in prison. And two of Pharaoh's assistants get thrown into jail. The baker, who baked all the stuff, and the cupbearer, or the wine taster, the person that would taste the wine before Pharaoh drank it just to make sure it wasn't poisoned, right? And so these two guys that get thrown into jail, where Joseph is, and one night they both have these crazy dreams, and they're just unsettled. They're like, I don't know what to do about these dreams. Well, Joseph comes to them, and if we look in verse 8, chapter 40, verse 8, they said to him, so the baker and the cupbearer, they said to him, we have had dreams, and there's no one to interpret them. And Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me. That's interesting. How do you think Joseph knew that he could interpret these dreams? Or that God would give him the interpretation? It doesn't say. I don't know. It's interesting to me that... So they share their dreams. And the interpretation of the dreams were that the cupbearer, in 3 days, he would be restored back to Pharaoh and be restored back to service, back to helping Pharaoh out. And the baker was going to be killed. And sure enough, just as Joseph interpreted, 3 days later, the baker was put to death, he was hanged, and the cupbearer was restored back to Pharaoh. So the last thing... let's see. All right, I think it was it should be. All right, so here you go. So in verse 14, after Joseph gives the interpretation, here's what he says to the cupbearer who's going to be restored. He says, "Only remember me when it is well with you, and please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this house. For I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here I have done nothing that they should put me into the pit." So that gives you, that's the most insight we get into Joseph's attitude or his thoughts about his situation, right? We get to peer into Joseph's mind for a second. He knows he's being mistreated. He was stolen out of the land of the Hebrews. He's been unjustly thrown into prison. And so he's asking, I'd love to get out of here, right? Joseph wasn't like someone that just, for some reason was a glutton for punishment and just accepted it and, okay, this is just my life and I guess it just sucks and I'm just going to be, here I am, where God's put me. No, like he wanted things to turn out differently, all right? So the wine taster, the cupbearer gets released. And yet, for two more years, Joseph is still stuck in jail. The wine bearer forgets about Joseph. All right, can you go to the next slide? So the question that I have for you, or two questions that I have for you, is what sustained Joseph throughout his time in Egypt? Specifically, this time of unfairness and injustice and mistreatment. What sustained him? How did he endure this injustice and unfairness? What do you think? Here's what I think. So Genesis, this much of the Bible right there, that's Genesis 1 through 37, right? Or 36. Joseph didn't have any of this. Joseph just had, what did he have?
Faith.
He had faith. That's right. Let's talk about what he had faith in. Remember I told you those promises to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob? Promises that to Abraham, God said, go and I will make you a great nation. I'll make your offspring as the dust of the earth. To Isaac, I will give you these lands. To Jacob, I am with you and I will bring you back to this land. I will give this land to your offspring after you. That was all that Joseph knew. Those promises, and those promises weren't even made to him. They were made to his great-grandfather, his grandfather, his dad. Think about those 17 years that Joseph was still living at home. Think about the stories that he was hearing. He heard about those promises probably over and over and over again, right? He heard about the creation story, about how God created the world, everything that there is from nothing. That's all that he knew. And I think that that is what sustained him. He knew that God had a plan and God had promises. He didn't know how they would be fulfilled, but that's what he put his faith in. Let's fast forward. Let's go to chapter 41. So in chapter 41, what happens is Pharaoh has a dream. And remember, the cupbearer is back with Pharaoh now. And Pharaoh has this dream, and it's kind of a twofold dream. All right. So the first part of his dream was that there's seven sick, ugly cows and seven healthy cows. And the seven sick cows eat the seven healthy cows. Kind of a weird dream. And the second one is just the same thing, but with stalks of grain. Seven unhealthy stalks of grain eat seven healthy stalks of grain. And this dream that Pharaoh has is really disturbing. And he wants to find out who can interpret this dream for him. Nobody can interpret it. And then all of a sudden the cupbearer says, Oh man, now I realize there's this dude in jail and I forgot about him. It's like 2 years ago, Pharaoh, 2 years ago, this is what happened. The baker and I were in jail, and we had dreams, and Joseph, this guy, interpreted them. He's this Israelite guy, this Hebrew, and man, I said I would say something about him, and I forgot, but Pharaoh, he can probably interpret your dreams. So guess what they do? They call for Joseph. They wash him up, they clean, he gets shaved and everything. He comes up to Pharaoh, and then what does it say in Chapter 41, verse 15. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. I have heard it said that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. So what does Joseph say? Yeah, I'm your man. Finally, they got me out of jail. This is my chance. Who does he give credit to? Joseph answered Pharaoh, it is not in me, but God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. Isn't that something? He wasn't even, that was his chance, right? To say like, okay, I'm the special guy. I'm the one that can do this for you. Nope. He gave God the credit. And so he interprets the dream. And the interpretation of the dream was that God would send seven plentiful years, years of abundance, where all of the Egyptians' crops would grow really well, and then followed by 7 years of famine. And the fact that the cows and the stalks of grain that they ate the healthy years was because the 7 years of famine that would follow would be so severe that it would basically like negate all of the years of abundance. So here's what in chapter 41, Joseph says, he gives the interpretation and he says, here's what you should do, Pharaoh. You need to appoint someone who can start gathering up stuff during the years of plenty, so that there's enough to, you know, provide for people during the 7 years of famine. And so what does Pharaoh say? It says in verse 37, Genesis 41:37, this proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you. That sounds a little unfair, right? But it's unfair the other way now. Like now, Joseph is getting promoted to vice president of Egypt, right? It's kind of a crazy turn of events. So Joseph becomes vice president, and he goes from being hated by his brothers to a slave, a servant in Egypt, to someone who's unjustly accused and thrown into jail, to now someone who's interpreted a dream for Pharaoh and given a wise interpretation, a wise proposal that God gave to him, and now he's second in command in Egypt. All right, can you go to the next slide? To summarize, so that those are four major stories in Joseph's life that are recorded in Genesis. Chapters 42 through 44, we're not going to go through. There's a lot of detail in 45 through 50. But ultimately, what Joseph prophesied came true. There was a famine. And ultimately, this famine was not just in Egypt. It was at least regional or maybe global. But the people in Canaan, where Jacob was and the rest of the Joseph's brothers, they're experiencing famine too. And so finally, Joseph's brothers come to buy food. Joseph tests them because he identifies them. He sees his brothers coming because Joseph was the one who was in charge of like selling all the grain, that sort of thing. And he tests them. And he finally, it's a really interesting story. It's worth reading. But he finally recognizes or realizes that they have some guilt and some remorse, and they kind of wish that they hadn't sold Joseph. And finally, he reveals himself to them. So if you go to the next one, Jimmy, chapter 45 is where Joseph reveals himself to his brothers. And his brothers are like shocked. I mean, I would be shocked. Anyone would be shocked, right, that this has happened, that Joseph has been elevated. They thought that Joseph was dead. They assumed that he was dead. And in fact, if you go back to chapter 37, they had taken Joseph's robe after they sold him to the slave traders. They took Joseph's robe, and they dipped it in blood, and they took it back to Jacob. And they said, hey, is this Joseph's robe? Looks like it. And Jacob assumed that Joseph was dead. And by this time, they all assumed Joseph was dead. They're like, man, he's gone, right? So here's their brother, and he's second in command in Egypt. But Joseph is not, he doesn't take any revenge on them. He forgives his brothers, and ultimately Jacob and his family move to Egypt. And it turns out, actually, let's go ahead and let's go to chapter, bear with me one second. Let's go to chapter 45, verses 5 through 8. So this is right after Joseph reveals himself to his brothers. Listen to Joseph's perspective on what's happened to him. Chapter 45, verses 5 through 8. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me, but God. He recognized God's hand in what his brothers had done. Okay, he said, it wasn't even you that sent me. It was God. God's the one that sent me here. So that's his perspective. That was his understanding of how these terrible events that happened to him, right? So fast forward now, let's go to chapter 50. We're finishing up the summary here. So ultimately, so Jacob and his family move to Egypt. They're taken care of there. And then finally Jacob dies, and the brothers think, oh no, now that Jacob's dead, now Joseph's going to take his revenge. Okay? And so in verse 18, this is chapter 50, verse 18, it says, his brothers also came and fell down before him, this is right after Jacob died, and said, behold, we're your servants. But Joseph said to them, do not fear, for am I in the place of God? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. So do not fear, I will provide for you and your little ones. Thus he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. And finally, if we look at verses 24 and 25, this is the end of Joseph's life. And this is what's referenced in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 22, read earlier. chapter 50, verse 24, it says, "And Joseph said to his brothers, I am about to die." So he was 110 years old. That's pretty old. He says, "I'm about to die, but God will visit you and bring you up out of this land to the land that he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob." Do you hear that? Do you hear what he said? He said, "I'm about to die, but God will visit you and bring you up out of this land that he swore." Who did he promise it to? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He didn't promise it to Joseph, but Joseph, still, he put his faith in those promises, right? He put his faith that this, because where are all the Israelites right now? This part of the story. They're in Egypt. They're not in Canaan. They're not in that promised land. And Joseph said, "No, I know God made all these promises that this is where we're going to end up, in the promised land. But right now we're in Egypt." So he believed, he knew that there would be an exodus at some point because he believed what God said. Okay? In verse 25, "Then Joseph made the sons of Israel swear," so he made his brothers promise, saying, "God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones. You shall carry up my bones from here." He wanted to be buried back in Canaan when they left. Okay? That's a summary of Joseph's life. That was probably the quickest summary that I could have come up with. But I want to, let's see, can you go to the next slide? Three final thoughts. First of all, Joseph recognized that no matter the circumstance, God is in control. And we talked about the tragic circumstances. We talked about all of the different things that happened to Joseph. He was treated unfairly. He was treated unjustly. But he recognized, we read in Genesis 45:5-8, that he said, "God sent me here to preserve life. It was not you who sent me, but me." So who was in control? Who sent Joseph to Egypt? It was God. God is the one who sent Joseph. Second application, Joseph recognized his part in God's story. The theme for the year is God and I can do more in 2024, right? So there's two parties there. There's God and I, right? Who's bigger? Who's more important? That's easy. God is, right? Now, we both do it together. We both do it together, but you know what? God is the one who's making it happen. And Joseph understood that in his part, right? He said at the beginning, or he said to his brothers, he said, "Am I in the place of God?" Like he was going to take revenge on his brothers or something. He said, "No, this is all God's doing. I'm just a piece of this." He recognized that, okay? And what I hope that we can do is we can recognize that, yes, we can do more in 2024 and 2025, every year. We can do more through God. It's not because of us. Who's it because of? It's because of him. He's the one that's going to give us the strength and the power to do it. And finally, the third one, in spite of unfair and unjust circumstances, Joseph demonstrated patient faith in God's plan and God's promises. This takes us back to what Terry mentioned in his email about looking for what men and women of faith did by trusting God's promises. The promises that Joseph had, there was just a few of them, right? There was the promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Joseph didn't know how God would take care of the Israelites and how they would leave Egypt and cross the Red Sea, and God would take care of them, and that they would eventually drive out most of the inhabitants of Canaan, and they would live there, and there would be judges, and then you'd have the prophets like Isaiah, who was going to prophesy about a suffering servant, and he didn't know anything about the fact that God would become a man, and Jesus would come down and would live a life, a perfect life, and ultimately die as a sacrifice for Joseph's sins and for my sins and for your sins. And he didn't know that he would be raised again 3 days later and that he would go to heaven and that he would say, "Okay, but you guys need to take the gospel everywhere." Joseph didn't know that stuff, but you guys do. And that's what I want to leave you guys with. You guys know, we know so much more than Joseph did. We know so much more of God's plan. We have so many more of God's promises than Joseph had. If Joseph could have that faith, just in the limit with the limited knowledge that he had, how much more should we have that faith? And the Apostle Paul says, "For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. We still don't know everything. We don't know exactly how God's going to work things out today, next week, in our lives. But we do know God's plan. We do know that we're sent here to make disciples, that we're here to encourage each other, to share the gospel. And we can do those things. We can step forward in faith. Last verse I want to leave you with is Philippians 4, 12 and 13. And if we're going to have faith in God's promises, I think it's good for us to think about a promise, right? To leave with a promise. Philippians 4, 12 and 13 says, "For I have learned in whatever situation I am in to be content. I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through Him who strengthens me." And He's the one who's going to strengthen you to do more in 2024. He's the one who's going to strengthen each one of us. Do you have that faith that He will? I hope that you do. Close us in prayer. Father, thank you for this time that we could look at Joseph's life. He went through a lot. I don't think I'd be able to bear up under it like he did, but thank you for his example of faith. I pray that we would live in the faith of the promises and the plans that you have, and we would look forward to joining you and working together this year. In your son's name, amen.